The Everest has been pretty consistent, hasn't it?
Great race.
Has been. So it's on at 4:15 Saturday. Caulfield Cup, 5:15. It is a massive day for racing, isn't it? You're in the camp that it's good. Good for the sport.
Oh, it is. Yeah, it creates interest from other people that might not particularly be interested. And there's been plenty of chat this week, good and bad. Plenty of healthy debate, which we like. And it's the richest race in Australia, if not the world. So anything that can produce that sort of money is going to get the best horses racing against each other. That's what we like.
A man who is involved, he's got a foot in both camps, let's be honest. Interested in his take, hear his take on this. Chris Lees, welcome here, Chris. Thanks for joining us on SEM Breakfast.
Yeah, good morning, boys. Good
morning, Chris. Are you of the opinion that the Everest is good for racing?
Oh, I'm sure it is. whenever you're racing for 14 million, I can't see too many negatives.
So,
as you said before, it's attracted so much attention and has done for nearly all year since horse winter sprint race is starting to talk whether it's an Everest horse or not.
So if we take away the $14 million prize money and you just have the best horses racing against each other, is it still as exciting? I mean, there's no group status to it. So it's not like winning a Group 1. It's purely about the prize money, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think the concept of it too, just how slot holders get to choose their horse and the intrigue, who they're going to take, whether that horse will, well, even when they take the horse, whether it remains in form, because most of them have got a get-out clause. So it's a different concept, and it certainly captured everyone's attention.
So, Chris, Brownie made a good point earlier. Where will you be on Saturday, and how much should we read into that?
Don't read anything into it, but I'll be in Sydney.
And why is that? What's the reasoning behind that decision?
Oh, look, it was a tough decision, definitely. But I thought it was the right thing to do. But, you know, I couldn't split it, to be honest. And
yeah.
I've got some good men with the horses in Melbourne that Cameron Swan's been looking after most of the year when he went into quarantine in Newmarket. And, so I thought I'd stay in Sydney.
Chris, you've got In Her Time running in the Everest. You've only had that mare for a little bit over 12 months. Ben Smith had it before getting transferred over to you. How's she travelling? She's such a consistent racehorse.
Very good mare. We elected to go into it first up. A little bit unorthodox, but she's got a terrific fresh record. She's won 5 of 8 first up, of which 2 Group 1 wins were first up, one being the Lightning earlier in the year. So we know she can perform early in the preparation. But the fact she's $26 shows you the depth of the field. I mean, she's a little bit out of sight, out of mind at the moment because I can't fault how she's going.
This will be the first year that the race will be run on a good track. The last couple of years there's been a bit of rain around in Sydney. Is that going to play into her hands, you think?
Yeah, it does. Last year when the rain came before the race, pretty much put us out of play, along with a few other horses. But I think they'll all get their chance tomorrow. And also, we've got a likelihood of a really solid tempo, whereas the last couple of years have been probably run at a little bit pedestrian early, but it looks like it'll be run at true tempo, which gives every horse their chance.
Tell us a bit about Mustajir as well, Chris. I was just reading that Richard Pegum had bought a 25% share in the horse last week.
Yeah, it was interesting. The original owners from Ireland, they retained a 25% share and they changed their mind. They wanted to get out of the horse, so it was put to auction. And we've got Richard Pegan and a few of his mates, which are great supporters of racing and really good people to have involved. The horse, we went into our care just over a month ago now when he first went into quarantine in Newmarket. So he does his 2 weeks there. Then 2 weeks at Werribee, and he came to us in really good order, very fit, as you'd imagine, that the European horse has had a reasonably long preparation, coming out of winning the Ebor 7 or 8 weeks ago. So it's just a matter of just keeping in good order. We haven't tested him too much on the track. As I said, he's very fit, and just comes down now how he gets around Caulfield.
You got the right man in the saddle. How long ago did you engage Damien Oliver to ride?
Oh, he was pretty much on the front foot when he won the Ebor, because we'd already the connections had already purchased the horse before the Ebor, so it was a good result for all concerned. And Ollie was straight on the front foot, and was very happy to have him locked in for the Caulfield Cup.
Just on In Her Time, Chris. I'm just coming back to the Everest. The odds are extraordinary. I don't know what your opinion of that is. I know you said she was over the odds for some particular reason, but good form. I mean, 8 starts, 5 wins, won the Group 1 Lightning Stakes, of course, at Flemington. What do you put that down to?
Oh, I think just the fact she hasn't raced, just preparation. So she's just continued to drift in the market through support of other horses that are racing in good form. So I assume that's it. But it does show the depth of the race when she's that price in any type of sprint race.
Well, certainly lots of good feedback, Chris, off the Speckle text machine here that it's great for the sport, both of them. Bit of feedback that up in Brisbane, that neutral territory, I suppose, that the Everest is getting all the coverage, not the Caulfield Cup. And down here, turnover at Caulfield has increased since the Everest. Most racing fans watch Sydney and Melbourne races, so it just adds to the day and he's great for racing.
Yeah, I think so. And it's great for all the participants. It's given everyone an opportunity to get a good chunk of prize money wherever they are. And jockeys, jockeys that wouldn't always get a ride in some of these bigger races are getting that opportunity as well. So I can't see too many negatives.
I've just been looking through the field for the Caulfield Cup and the Melbourne Cup. Do you have to have a Japanese or European type horse, an international, to genuinely be competitive in these cups these days, Chris?
Well, I think they're getting stronger and stronger. I think if you look back at some cups from 10, 20, probably more, 20 years ago or so, you know, them old Australian handicappers, they're flat out making the race these years. So I do think they're getting more difficult to win and a better class of horses coming out for them. So there'll be the odd Australian handicapper, I suppose, will win every now and then, but I think it's less regular.
Chris, we appreciate your time this morning. Best of luck to Mustajir down here at the Caulfield Cup and, of course, in her time up there in Sydney where you'll be for the Everest. All the best with it.
Thanks, Chris. I'll see you at the Magic Millions.
Good on you, Campbell. Thanks, boy.
Cheers, mate.
Good on you. Hello, Sam Edmund and Campbell Brown, though, because Gaz and Tim have taken a little break. Great pleasure to have Campbell Brown in the studio as well. We've been talking about the trade period, the AFL trade period. The frenzy is over. It's too long for some, not long enough for others. A lot of deals left on the table, a lot of deals done, a lot of deals rumoured, Brownie, as well. Through nothing to do with the players. This is the nature of the beast. Now, one of those players who was, I would say, unwittingly dragged into talks, I think it'd be fair to say, he's over the other side of the world at the moment. In fact, he's in Denver. It's fantastic to have his company. Thanks for joining us, Mason Cox.
Yeah, thanks for having me, boys.
What are you doing over there, Mason?
Oh, just gallivanting around the United States. I've got a cousin's wedding this weekend out in Denver, so I'm just biked off to the Rocky Mountain area. Just going to go for a few hikes and stuff before Saturday for the wedding and just enjoy a bit of nature.
So where have we got you as we speak? Are you on top of some peak somewhere? Well, good signal.
Oh, no, I'm in a parking lot. There's a little town in Estes National Park just north of Denver. So I've rolled out to this little town, so I get a little bit of service, a few bars, and we have a little chat with you boys.
What was your makings of the trade period? You would have all of a sudden woken up one morning and your name was getting thrown around, not just to any club, but to your arch rival in Essendon.
Yeah, it was interesting. I woke up and spent the day on the beach and was really relaxed and everything else and started getting messages saying I was going to Essendon. So, yeah, it's quite interesting. My first kind of time, I guess, being tossed into the trade part of everything. And, it's a bit of, a bit of misreading, I think, from some people and misreporting, all that kind of stuff, which happens with the nature of the beast. But, it is what it is. I'm happy I'm still staying at Collingwood and nothing changes for me. We just keep moving on.
But being an American and growing up over in the States where this sort of stuff happens quite regularly, did that hold you in pretty good stead mentally?
Oh, yeah, I think at the end of the day, we're all probably, I hate to say it, but pawns in a bigger game of chess. And, it is what it is. And clubs got to make decisions, you know, to make salaries happen and everything else, and conversations will be had between different clubs and everything else without your, I guess, approval or whatever it is. But at the end of the day, like, it's a business, and you got to do what's best for yourself, and the clubs got to do what's best for themselves. And unfortunately, sometimes those two don't align.
Mason, we won't bang on about it all morning, of course, but how did it end with you? Obviously, there was a bit of conjecture over whether talks happened or not, and then your manager, Adam Ramanauskas, said, look, there were some discussions between the two clubs, but it never really went any further than that preliminary stage. How was it left with you ultimately? Because you contracted, of course, you got one more year to run at Collingwood.
Yeah, it's early year contract, and I think what happened was AFL put out on like Twitter or something saying that I was personally talking to Hudson, which which just never happened. So I was never contacted from anyone from that club. And whether or not the clubs were having conversations, that's something that probably happens on a daily basis with every single player on the list on that. So I was totally ignorant to it. But, yeah, I was never personally contacted by Essendon or ever seeked out any kind of trade or anything on my half. So I was just kind of left in the dark of the whole thing, wondering what was going on. But at the end of the day, we figured it out and got everyone on the same page. And, the agent earned a dollar that day and figured it all out.
Mason, getting away from the trade period stuff, how's the body? You missed the back end of this year with that nasty eye injury to your retina. How's your sight coming along?
Yeah, it was tough going for about a month and a half, 2 months, and I was pretty much legally blind for a while. And we've got to the point now, we're almost back to 2020. Still on a lot of medications and everything else, but I've been fortunate enough now to be able to get back to see family, travel, get in an airplane again, which is really good, and be able to drive and get a bit of independence. I think for a long time it was just sitting in a dark room, staring at the ceiling, and not much going on in my life. And it was about 45 minutes of every hour I had to spin on my back, so I couldn't really get out and about or do much. And it's nice to see the light at the end of the tunnel now. And we're getting to the point now where I can start properly working out and everything else. Hopefully, whenever preseason day one comes around, we'll be able to do contact.
Were there any brief moments there where you thought that your vision might not come back?
After every surgery, pretty much, you'd wake up and your eyes would be swollen shut, and you go, the doctor did well. Just wait for those 30 minutes until he got back in and told you how the surgery went. But I was fortunate enough, I had a great doctor, and he's been really checking up on me and making sure everything's gone smoothly. And it would just take those 2 or 3 days to start getting vision out of the eyes again. But like I said, after waking up after anesthetics and not being able to see anything and just putting full faith in the doctor's hands was a bit of a scary moment at times.
Just seeing your last Instagram post, you're playing top golf over there. Not hitting them that well. Are you sure your vision's completely back, mate?
Like I can hit the ball, but I've got no idea where it is. That's the problem. So I've got a little tracker on the ball that says, "Oh, wait, this way, this miles an hour, and all that kind of stuff." I'll just trust that thing.
Fantastic. Hey, Mason, when you said you were legally blind, though, so were you able to get around? Are you able to drive a vehicle and all that sort of stuff?
No, I couldn't drive for about a month and a half. So I started off, it was 2 weeks of 45 minutes of every hour on my back, and then but a week after that, I got another surgery. I had 3 surgeries, or 2 on one arm, 1 on the other. And then, I eventually kind of got the independence to be able to go on 1 walk a day and then 3 walks a day. And then from there, once I kind of gained eyesight in both my eyes, the doctor said, yeah, if you feel comfortable enough, you can start driving again, which, like I said, it's one of those things, whenever you take it for granted every day until you lose it, and you realize how valuable it is and how much you actually use it every single day. And it was tough going for a while, but we've come out the back end of it. We're doing a lot better.
Fantastic. You think Brownie's someone of Mason's size, the eyes would be the last thing you'd have to worry about. How do you get up that eye to poke him? It's incredible. And Mason, now you're heading back home, quote unquote, to Texas for a bit of time.
Yeah, it's so on Sunday I'm actually headed back to Dallas. So I've been gallivanting around the state and haven't really even been home yet. But I'm headed back to Dallas and we got a pretty cool experience coming up. I'm actually, Nathan Buckley is going to meet me out in Dallas, and we're going to go to the Dallas Cowboys game. So we've been linked up with NFL Australia and asked him to take over the social account for the day. Socials on Instagram and Twitter, and just document the whole experience. So we're fortunate enough that they're going to hook us up with some sideline passes and really good seats and everything else and the full shebang and the whole experience.
So you're obviously a Cowboys
pretty
fan.
Pretty excited to get down there. Being from Dallas, you don't really have a choice, to be honest. It's America's team, but if you support anyone else besides Dallas and you live there, you're gonna have a tough time. But they actually play their arch rivals in the Eagles on Sunday night, so it'll be one of the biggest games of the year, which will be, I think, Monday around noon, I want to say, in Australia time. So it'll be a massive game. The stadium's one of the biggest in the world. It's a pretty impressive place. And I'm pretty excited to get back and see my first Cowboys game in a while.
They need to bounce back, too. They were surprised. They lost last week over in New York, didn't they? So pressure will be on Prescott and Zeke Elliott and the boys.
Yeah, they lost to they just got their first win of the season on us last week, so that was not a great outing for us. But hopefully it'll be a big, like I said, it'll be a massive game. So hopefully we can get back on the track, get a bit of confidence going into the rest of the season. And it's going to be a great experience. I think just for myself being back home and being able to show back, I guess, somewhat of my hometown, where where I've grown up and everything else would be pretty cool.
That's going to be fantastic. And just as well, Mason, you didn't get traded. Could have been pretty awkward at the game next to the that. Next to the main man, the coach.
You say that. He gave me a call, actually. I think the day that all that stuff came out, he was like, look, 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 let's just be cool with this. Like, we're still going to go to Dallas. It's all good. I was like, no, no, no. I tell him what's going on. You tell me. So, it was quite an interesting couple of days going back and forth between them.
I reckon it's his shout, mate, so hit him up early when he gets over there. He's round first up, no doubt about that. Mate, best of luck. Enjoy the break. Glad to hear the eye and the injuries are coming along, and look forward to seeing you prosper in pre-season and rip into a big 2020.
Yeah, thanks, boys. I appreciate it. Should be good fun, and definitely looking forward to getting back to training.
Cheers, Mason.
Fantastic here from Mason Cox over there. One of the good guys in the game.
Absolutely, and they missed him late in the year.
They did.
You just need to think, if he was playing, they might have got through. They would have got through.
And isn't it funny, September time, they still dredge up those highlights of
so
him
they should.
Running amok.
They will forever. I've never been to a game where
more
the USA chant was just coming out from the Australian public. It was
one of the great moments, wasn't it?
Yeah.
For shock value.
I love preliminary final week often, not more than grand final week, but someone lifts their side over the line. And this year it was Tom Lynch.
Yep.
You know, last year it was Mason Cox. There's always those great stories that you think, well, they helped them get there.
And that is good. I mean, that gets back to the connection. We do bang on a little bit about it between the coach and his players. Like, for Bucks to fly all the way over there, get shown around where Mason grew up, where he's from. As we said, that might have been a little bit awkward if he just punted him to Essendon. But that didn't happen and was never going to happen. So, great news all around. All right, we'll have a little spell. We'll wrap up the hour, actually. It's coffee o'clock, Brownie. I'm going over to the McCafe to grab a little caffeine hit, and then we'll wrap up the hour after this. We've tracked down James Ace. She's joined us. We can get a few minutes out of here. James, thanks for giving us a buzz. New Fremantle Docker.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
How does it feel, mate? Are you feeling like you got purple on yet? I know you, fortunately or unfortunately, you've had a bit of practice in this space at Brisbane, Collingwood now at the Dockers, but, geez, it happened quick.
Yeah, it did happen quick, and going into trade period, it probably wasn't even a thought. But I sort of had, I guess it happened within 5 days, but by the end of that, I had my head around it and I was really excited. So, now I'm sort of doing the exciting things, looking at places, trying to sort of the move over and get ready for the start of training.
How much of the decision, Justin Longmuir, obviously you know him really well with his time at Collingwood. If he's not the senior coach of Frio, do you still make the same decision?
Hard to say, possibly not, and hard to know if the offer would have even been there as well, to be honest. So, played a huge role.
Yep.
I really respect him, and we built a really good relationship, so that's going to be pretty exciting and hopefully a really good thing for my career.
What are his strengths going to be as a senior coach next year?
I think just simply looking at the way he does coach, he delivers his messages really well, so he was massive for the Collingwood just defence, really, and he changed the way we were able to defend and helped us heaps the last couple of years, so... Yeah, just his teaching methods is going to be really good. He's really big on the mental side of things, so developing that mental strength and resilience, I think it's going to be good for a young group with Frio. And he's just building relationships these days is obviously really important, so he's going to be really good at that. And we'll just coach the boys the way he wants to and build a really well-structured team.
We're speaking to new Fremantle midfielder James Ace. James, I read a report where Justin Longmuir was referred to as J-Lo. Does he seriously go by the... do you call him J-Lo over there?
I'm not sure what he likes the best, but you can get a few mixed friends, J-Lo or Longy or Justin, I guess. But, I'm not too sure what his preferred is.
Justin makes sense. Hey, tell us, though, at Collingwood, how real is the salary cap squeeze at that club at the moment?
It's hard to completely know, like a little bit. Yeah, it's obviously been reported a few boys were either approached or looking a little bit, and it's definitely there. They've obviously got to try and keep those three players who are superstars. And I think the problem is obviously in the market, the opposing teams probably can offer a bigger deal to try and pry them away. So. It's going to be interesting how the Pies can keep everyone, but hopefully for their sake, they can keep most lists together.
How's the body feeling, James? You've obviously in your career so far had plenty of injuries, the shoulder and some concussion issues, but how's the body leading into this sort of pre-season break?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. I think I'll be fine by the start of pre-season, so I'll be good. I had a really minor shoulder surgery at the end of this season, but I sort of don't really have any dramas, and I'm just hoping for a full pre-season. But in some ways, I've been a bit unlucky. They've just been collision injuries, really, so contact, and has to come down to a bit of luck. But hopefully a big pre-season, get fit and strong, and it gives me the best chance and hopefully play a full season.
Well, mate, I'm a Perth boy, so get yourself a nice little apartment in Peppermint Grove. I've got a guy that can get you a boat over in Rottnest, duck into the Llama Bar, the OBH on a Sunday, mate. We'll sort you out over in Perth. You'll love it.
Perfect. I'll get
them all down. Write all that down, Jimmy. Thanks for joining us this morning in the middle of a logistically difficult time for you, and best of luck with the move in 2020.
Thanks for that. Appreciate it.
James Ash joining his third AFL club, Brownie, the Fremantle Dockers. Speaking of a whirlwind.
Small town, Perth.
Yes.
They love their football. He'll be under the microscope. But, it's a good town. I lived there when I was a bit younger.
You've got that glint in your
eye.
I get
back there a couple of times a year and I enjoy it.
It's discover the best deals with Hello World Travel, the travel professional. Speaking of glint in the eye, Meredith has got one of those because she's chomping at the bit for this news update. Thanks very much to Meredith Gibbs in the newsroom and also to James Ash joining us there. Brownie, but we need to turn our attention to Japan because there's a pretty big event going on over there at the moment. It is the Rugby World Cup, and they don't get much bigger than the Wallabies and the English, and they do battle about 6:30 our time tomorrow night. It's reached the sudden death phase, quarterfinal.
It's all been happening over there, hasn't it? There's been a cyclone, Hagibis, that destroyed some of the leading games, but this is as big as it gets, and I think we're a chance, Sammy. I really do.
I hope so. Well, to use your parlance, it's a two-horse race, but we haven't beaten them for a while. And I'm interested to get the take and the opinion of a former Wallaby man who pulled the shirt on, of course. His name is Stephen Hoyles from Fox Sports, and he's been keeping a very close eye on proceedings over there in Japan. Thanks for joining us this morning, Steve.
No worries, boys. How you going?
Very well. Our appetite is well and truly wet for this one. How big is this? This is going to be a monster on Saturday night.
Yeah, I think in a lot of people's opinion, the quarterfinals is almost the most exciting week. You know, you've got eight quality teams. There's going to be four heartbroken. And, you know, if you win a quarterfinal, I think most teams are relieved to get through. But this is always, you speak to anyone who's won a World Cup, and they always say the quarterfinal is the danger game because there can be a little bit of complacency. You're coming up against someone who, if you won your pool, someone got second in your pool. And that's the Wallabies. You know, they finished second in their pool. They didn't have a bad four games. They had mixed fortunes here and there. They played some good footy in almost every one of their games, but everyone seems to be saying that they're no chance against England, who only, you know, played three games. Essentially, England haven't had a tough game in their pool. The hardest one was going to be France, but that got cancelled because of the typhoon. So I'm pretty confident in an even battle, to be honest.
Stephen, how important is getting Reece Hodge back on the wing following his suspension?
Yeah, look, it's good for the side. I think Reece is a guy who... He's a stable player, and players like Reece give players around him confidence. He's got a long kicking game. He's good under the high ball. He's just a mature for a guy. You know, he's only a few years into his Wallaby career. He's a pretty comfortable and consistent mature player, and he can also slot, you know, really long range goal kicks, which we haven't been good at in this World Cup. If there's one area you'd be concerned about, and England are probably the same. They've got Owen Farrell, who's normally a world class kicker. He hasn't been kicking well all that well either, but Reece is, you know, we've seen him before kick penalty goals out from near 60 metres or 60 metres at altitude in particular. So he's got a big boot on him.
How the hell did he get suspended for three games?
He can't let it go.
I used to revere this game as tough and hard.
We need an hour, especially if we're going to try and get the red card issues. Look, I just think World Rugby is just trying to have such a big crackdown on anything that's around the head. The irony is, I think if Reece Hodge had got 10 minutes in the sin bin during that game, it wouldn't have even been looked at. But to follow up with 3 weeks, look, they've been consistent with their high shots, World Rugby. Anything that's, you know, contact in the neck or above, people get suspended. And, you know, part of me is disappointed in that. I played the game myself, got kids that play the game, coach juniors, all that sort of stuff. We understand the risk, but I also know that it's a contact sport and that's part of the theatre of why we love sport. But let's just hope we're not talking about red cards and yellow cards after the quarterfinals.
And we're speaking to former Wallaby Stephen Hall. Say, Steve, what about Jordan Patea? Now, Michael Checker's gone all in here. He's going to be the youngest player to ever start a World Cup fixture. He comes in at the age of 19. What can you tell us? Just his third test.
Yeah, look, they tried to get him a test. He was picked in a test match this time last year, but he got injured just before that game. He got injured earlier this year in one of the earlier tests. To be blunt, the kid's he's a freak. He's so talented. He's about 6 foot, 300 kilos. He's unbelievably athletic. I like the fact that he can play it tough through the middle in the centres, or he can play it wide, or some really good aerial skills. He's as talented as any player we've seen probably come through in the Wallabies in the last 10 or 15 years. Yeah, he's probably been thrown in the deep end a little bit, but the Wallabies have had him in camp for the best part of 12 months now. So while we haven't seen a huge amount of him on that field in a Wallaby jersey, he's very comfortable in that environment. And he's also spent pretty much the whole summer and most part of the off-season training at number 13 outside Simon Crevy at the Queensland Reds. He just didn't play any Super Rugby because he got injured after round one. So talent's not going to be an issue with this kid. He'll be in a Wallaby jersey for 10 years. Let's just hope this is a game we're talking about for all the right reasons.
Hey, and Steve, what's the tradition there at the Wallabies? As the youngest in the squad, he has to carry around the team stuff Wallaby, the toy.
Yeah, there's normally a mascot, Wally, and the smarter guys this day and age generally pack a couple of spare because most guys spend most of their week trying to steal Wally and send ransom notes for him and put him in all sorts of uncomfortable positions. It's not an easy job, to be honest. He'd probably be more stressed about what happens to Wally in the 80 minutes he's on the field. Although I think actually that's the only 80 minutes of the game where Wally's off limits and you can't do anything to him. So he's got a few little traditions there, which is keep him grounded. And he's probably going to be the youngest player for the next two or three years too.
Well, Steve, we can't wait for it. We haven't beaten them in 4 years. So as we say in the industry, we are due. But we can't wait for it. Looking forward to it. Thanks for your time this morning.
No worries, guys. Thanks for the chat.
Big thanks to former Wallaby Stephen Hoyles there. Now, every World Cup game, Brownie, is live and ad break free on Foxtel. You knew that anyway, but I'm just telling the SEN family. This weekend with the Wallabies v England from Saturday at 6:15, and then the All Blacks are up after that as well. So they've...
Formidable unit.
Very formidable unit.
Good book. I've read the book about the All Blacks.
Oh, I haven't. Any good?
Yeah, outstanding. Must read.
Okay. All right. Well, we need to, speaking of must, we need to take a break.